Vagar Maraxes.
Nights of summer. Nights of summer.
Oh my god.
Okay.
Just in case you didn't think a Dynasty League podcast could get geekier, let's make Game of Thrones podcast references, not even to the real thing. Episode 91 of There Is No Offseason, a baseball prospectus daily podcast focusing solely on Fantasy Keeper and Dynasty League formats. I'm your host, Ben Carsley of the BP Fantasy Team, and I'm joined by BP's managing editor, Brett Sayer, and BP's minor league editor, Craig Goldstein. Brett, Craig, good to have us all back together post-Craig's bachelor party, which I guess this is the second time. But that's how damaged I was from the bachelor party that I feel the need to reintroduce that. So, Brett, on a scale from one to Zach Granite, how are you feeling about George's question before we hopped on the podcast?
I am feeling pretty speedy right about now.
Craig, do you have any Zach Granite-related puns and or information to pass along?
I'm feeling marble.
That doesn't even make sense.
It's a type of countertop.
Craig, you've hit rock bottom.
Thank you, Ben.
Yeah, I appreciate you, actually. I wasn't sure where that setup was going. Okay, so tonight we are going to talk about the Dynasty Prospect Rankings 2017 Midseason Top 50, which Brett and I have collaborated on and which was published on Wednesday on the BP main site. So for those of you who were with us in the preseason rankings, which I'm assuming we're not getting any new listeners, so it's probably everybody, Brett and I have tried something new now twice. Basically, instead of coming up with separate lists and then presenting them to you as such, we are forcing ourselves to collaborate before the big list goes live and bringing just one finished product to you, which, although it leads to the occasional disagreement over GChat or phone call, we really like because I think it sort of balances out some of our best and worst qualities as rankers. It makes us both aware of all the information presented to us. And maybe my favorite part is that even though it's only one list, it makes Craig just as mad as if there were two separate lists. And really, you can't put a price on that value. So we're going to start the podcast by going through the top 50. Then we'll take a break and talk about some guys who didn't quite make it in some current events. But with that out of the way, Craig, are you in a position in which you would be able to catch keys?
Yeah, I guess so.
All right. So if you think you can handle it, I'm going to toss the metaphorical keys to you.
Yeah, I don't want the medical keys.
Yeah, not complete, for anybody. Complete with sound effect.
Oh, here we go. Oh, I got it. All right. So you started this off. I mean, I guess I should comment on the theme of the list here, and it's Game of Thrones themed. I guess the first thing I'm most interested in is how long did the tier discussions take in terms of naming the tiers? I don't care about how long it took to slot people into them.
Not that long. We were mostly in agreement. I will say that Brett came in really, really clutch when we got to tier three because I was missing the small council and I was having a difficult time ranking this very, very small tier of players. So Brett really sort of saved the day with that.
Okay. Yeah, and that makes sense. I mean, I guess we should also note that, like, you have been the Game of Thrones kind of guru. I've talked to you a lot about it over the years, and Brett kind of caught up over the last year or so, Brett?
Yeah, really the last 6 months or so.
Yeah, just start to finish, and then also he binge-moded, did binge mode for everything, which is a lot of podcasts about Game of Thrones
too. Right, so. Which, and I was pleased by how many of our listeners understood the Knights of Summer reference. that was just good for me. And Brett, I do think that before the podcast is over, you and I owe the people of Aegar and Meraxes, but we can wait until the time is right.
we can wait until the time is right for that one.
All right, so the first tier that we deal with, War of the Five Kings, makes sense. It's a five-person tier. Moncada, Rogers, Rosario, Robles, and Devers. Obviously, they're within a tier, but do you feel that there's any substantial separation between the anyone in the tiers? Is there? It might not be enough to separate them on their own, but kind of, you know, you feel pretty concretely, or do you feel like it's kind of a mix and match situation?
Yeah, only that Moncada is one. I guess we could have made him his own tier, King in the North or something. But other than that, you know, 2 through 5, I think are pretty interchangeable. Of course, because Devers is 5, I think he has the toughest case for 2. I wouldn't really agree with him at 2. But, you know, Rogers and Rosario, basically Brett and I had a very similar argument between the two of them in the preseason rankings. And in that one, we went with Rosario ahead of Rogers. But the thing about hitting 400 is that it's 400. So we decided that was a pretty good tiebreaker and put Rogers above Rosario. Robles, I think, is fine anywhere from, you know, 2 to 4. I do think Robles is better than Devers. So basically 1 and 5 are fixed for me, and anywhere from 2 to 4, I have no arguments.
Okay. Yeah, no, that makes sense. And Brett, I just real quick, would you agree with that, or do you have a different take on it?
No, I'd agree with that. The one thing I will say about the Rogers and Rosario thing is I think when we were debating it internally in the off season, part of the reason why I got comfortable with putting Rosario over Rogers is because, silly me, I thought Rosario would actually contribute in 2017. But as that
you have not met Terry Collins, my man.
Yeah, I know. And so as that has not happened and Rogers has already made it to double A, I think the shrinking of their ETAs, you know, even regardless of Rogers hitting 400, which is incredibly impressive, I think that pushed Rogers.
The ETA pushed him more
somewhat
than,
comfortably more ahead for me, at least in terms of that. But
yeah. So, I mean, as we learned at the BP Mets event, the Mets are not going to call up Rosario if they are going good or if they're going bad. So it's kind of a thin needle to thread there.
Gotta be going medium.
Yeah. Or as Alderson said, completely out of it. If they are out of it in August, we'll probably see Rosario. That was the word that we got. So that was news to everybody. But Brett, I want to stick with you and I want to talk about ETA a little bit since you mentioned it with Rogers. Robles is the only person in the top two tiers, really, and we'll get to tier two in a minute, but he's the only person in the top two tiers who's currently in the lower minors, I believe. And so
Jimenez is still in high A.
Oh, right. Now, Jimenez, right. I apologize. Yeah. So there are two of them. So he's the only one in tier one. And it's relatively sparing for, you know, between the two tiers. So what does this say? If you're someone who's reading this ranking, what does it say to you that you have someone that far away who is in the top five? Is it essentially saying this guy is your next top fantasy prospect, like the next number one guy, or, you know, If you're more of a novice reading this or whatever it is, like how am I to interpret that? Because obviously we do tie a lot of value to proximity, and he's relatively further away.
Yes.
So you're talking about a monster?
Yes. In short, yes. I think we are. I think he's got the second highest fantasy upside on this list next to Moncada.
Yep. Agreed.
And that's what I was driving. Yeah.
Yeah. So once Moncada graduates, and I assume Moncada will not be on the 101 that we do in the off season, Robles will be the highest upside fantasy player in the minors. So whether he's number one in the off season or not kind of depends how he closes out the season and whether he can sort of do anything to advance his ETA even a little bit. But I mean, all five tools could be well in play for Robles, including speed that is not just there but potentially impactful. So he could absolutely be a monster. Yeah.
Okay. So speaking of potential monsters and you know, people who could move relatively quickly, I think we're going to cover some of this in current events, but Ronald Acuña now at AAA, Ben, is, I mean, he wasn't even dominating high A when he got promoted to double A. He did kind of crush double A. What are you seeing out of Ronald Acuña that puts him ahead of some guys who are in the majors already, when we talk about Frazier and Barreto, who are in this second tier?
Yeah, I mean, for me, I agree with what Brett just said about Robles being number two for upside behind Moncada. But if Acuña is a full step behind him, I would say he's only a half step behind him in terms of ultimate upside. To the point where, you know, you were asking about the tiers earlier.
Yep.
I think you could argue that Acuña should be closer to Devers in the first tier. I'd be totally receptive to that argument. Just, you know, how quickly things change. Even when we did finalize this list, Acuña was also only in double A, so it didn't seem.
Yeah, he moved to triple A today.
Right, exactly. But in my book, almost exactly the same type of five-tool fantasy monster Robles could be. Pretty big fan, you know, like you said, the promotion to double A was aggressive, but the promotion to triple A, while being aggressive, almost doesn't seem it just because of what he did to double A already. So maybe a guy who I think might get to the majors faster than he'll be a fantasy impact player, if that makes any sense, which is sort of what Brett and I tried to capture with these fantasy ETAs rather than overall ETAs. But, you know, long term, if you told me he was one of the two or three guys you were the highest on this list, I think that's totally reasonable. I think he's a stud.
All right.
Yeah, I think his upside is number three on the list behind Robles and Moncada. I think that's pretty clear. And not that, you know, we talk about things changing in the prospect landscape, and they definitely do. You know, the promotion to AAA doesn't change what I think Ben thinks his ultimate upside is. But, you know, when I talk about whether Robles is number one on the list next year, depending on how he can sort of force his ETA closer, this promotion to AAA makes Acuña's
ETA a little bit closer.
And honestly, knowing about the promotion, I probably would have. If this had happened a week ago, my guess is Ben and I would have had the discussion about moving him up into the first tier, and we likely would have.
Yeah, so I guess that's another thing. Obviously, I had a lot of involvement in the mid-season top 50 for the prospect team. I mean, I'm assuming this could be a very dumb question, but we talk about it as a snapshot in time. I'm assuming the same thing for fantasy value. It's not that different a process in terms of putting it together, and that this is something that's actually pretty fluid. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
I agree with that. I think in some ways it's more fluid than a regular prospect list, and in some ways it's less fluid.
Mm-hmm.
But it absolutely falls under the whole snapshot territory.
Speaking of fluidity, Eloy Jimenez traded today from Chicago to Chicago. He gets to walk from Myrtle Beach is hosting Winston-Salem, so he gets to walk across the dugout. Or they might not be hosting, but they're playing each other, so he doesn't have far to go. Does the trade do anything for him against him, Ben?
No. For me, it's pretty much stasis lock. I mean, I guess he probably has a clearer path to playing time with Chicago
and a little bit more aggressive, and the White Sox tend to be aggressive with their hitters.
Yeah. So I would say a little bit of a clearer path to playing time, but he's the type of talent where they would have made room for him anyway on the Cubs.
Yeah.
But maybe those early years, he's given more of a margin for error. You know what I mean? Maybe not under quite as much pressure to perform right away in the majors as he would be as a Cub. So, no, not really. But, you know, if you want to call it a very, very, very slight bonus, I'm on board with that.
Will he ever have a first half as good as Abisail Garcia this year?
Yes.
I think yes. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's worth knowing.
Because I think he could do that, but with more power, basically.
Yeah. So the next two on the list are New York Yankees. Brett Clint Frazier is hitting .292, .308, .875 in 7 games in the majors. It's obviously an extremely small sample size. He is not walking. He is striking out a lot. What are you expecting from him the rest of this year? And obviously you put his ETA, his impact ETA, 2017. He's playing right now. He's going to be impacting fantasy lineups. But when is he going to be the Clint Frazier that we kind of expect?
I think from a power and a little bit of speed perspective, I think he can be that from the jump. You know, I think Frazier is the kind of player who can struggle a little bit with batting average here and there. Especially at the beginning of his career, I think pitchers will adjust to him. I think he'll adjust back. He's been somewhat slow historically to adjust to new levels. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I think that the power, I think that the non-batting average stuff, especially being in the Yankees lineup and at Yankee Stadium, I think will buoy him so that he's pretty consistently playable until he becomes the Clint Frazier that I think he will become.
Okay. And Ben, Glaber, obviously the Tommy John, it's to a non-throwing arm, and it was not wear and tear, obviously, since he's not throwing with it. It was an impact injury. Are you concerned at all? And, I mean, what were you seeing out of Glaber ahead of the injury, and does that change at all? Do you just factor in a little more risk? What are you doing with him?
I don't even know if I factor in more risk, because it would seem to be a pretty benign injury, right? It would almost be like if he had not severely fractured his shin bone or something, right? Like, it shouldn't seem to me to be an injury that would really impact his movement on the field in any way moving forward. It just knocks him back. It's missed reps. I know he's very talented, but I think whenever you're at the position in the minors where he is, you know, that missed time hurts a little bit. I don't know how much higher he would have been if this hadn't happened. I would still personally have him in tier two, even if he had stayed healthy. Just because I think he's really more average driven than any other fantasy tool right now, and maybe he'll grow into power, but I don't see it yet. So maybe if this had not happened, I guess I could see him at six leading this tier. For me, it was a pretty easy decision to just, you know, accept that he'll be exactly the player he was when he got hurt starting the first game of next season, which means that I would anticipate he'll be in the majors, you know, in June 2018, probably as a third baseman.
Yeah, I mean, and the unfortunate angle on this is that, you know, if he doesn't get hurt, that he's probably up within a week.
Right,
You know, when he got hurt. Ben, I want to stick with you just because Franklin Barreto, he's your guy.
He's my guy.
So, you know, you had news from the Citadel in terms of basically what's happening in the walk-off bomb. Have you been able to watch him in Oakland, the brief period of time he's been up?
Yeah, I mean, it's what he's done is not really surprising, right? He's struggling but showing flashes of a pretty talented player, which is pretty much Franklin Barreto. But, you know, he's always been young for his level. He's pretty much always hit despite being young for his level. I think odds are he's not a shortstop, but I do think they'll try him at second base. I mean, my suspicion is they'll trade Lowry and open up sort of second base for Barreto to take over full time, because Simeon has proven to be decent enough that they'll probably try him at short. So I think that, you know, by the time August 1st rolls around, Barreto will be their regular second baseman and occasional shortstop for the rest of the season. And I don't really care how he performs unless it's really, really miserable in the majors, because I think they're really getting ready for him next year. And I don't really expect the average and power to be what they will be at their peak right away, but I do think he'll be pretty good and steal some bases next year. And then I think by the time we get into 2019, 2020, that's when you'll see him start to challenge for, I do think he's a .280, .290 hitter in the majors, and I think he can challenge for double digit home runs as well.
Okay. So a couple follow-ups. So you said, like, you're not worried about his struggles this year, and I agree. I think that makes sense. How long would he have to struggle, if you want to extend it into next year before you are concerned? I mean, I think that's something we deal with prospects all the time, but he seems one, it's hit tool based, and, how long does he have to not hit for you to start to waver?
Yeah, it's a really good question. I think if he's up in August and gets the rest of this year and starts in the majors next year and he's not hitting by June, I think that's a good indication that maybe he needs to take a step back and go back to the minors for a little while. So I guess, 3 to 4 months of regular MLB time before I'm not even concerned long term, but before I'm willing to walk his fantasy ETA back.
Sure. And obviously he's so young, right? So he's exactly. only 21 right now. And so I guess the other part of that is right. I mean, he obviously might end up back in the minors, but that's not even a real, if you're looking really long term, that's not even that big a detriment. So what has to happen? And I'm not trying to pick on you or Barreto, but as an example, like, what has to happen before you start to say, like, yeah, I'm going to think about moving him because I'm actually worried here.
Yeah,
I would assume for you, even in June, if he gets sent back down, you're still believing and you're not going to sell him at his nadir. So
I guess it's why is he sent back down, right? Like, if he's just not hitting, that's one thing. But are the reports that he can't pick up spin? Are the reports that his swing has somehow changed, for the worse? Even that's not as big a deal to me because that can be fixed mechanically. But if it's more of like a pitch recognition issue, that would be a big red flag to me. That would be the only one, right?
I mean, if it just
it's the reason why he's being sent down more than the fact that he's being sent down.
Makes total sense. Second follow up, really short. How weird was it to use Eduardo Nunez as a positive?
Wasn't comfortable, and someone commented on that in the comments, and I probably should have been even more sympathetic because it's weird. It's fucking weird. But Nunez was very, very, very good.
And he's doing it again. I mean, it's below average in WRC plus or whatever, or in WRC plus, but because he doesn't walk at all. But
doesn't matter.
And he runs. So
doesn't matter. And I did put the new Eduardo Nunez.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
Still weird. But
it stuck out.
Did you like my bad comp though? That was for us.
I did. And I knew you wrote that because Chris Owings is pretty damn good. But to that point, to the point of what we were talking about, he took a long time.
Right. And I didn't write the new Chris Owings. I sort of meant total Chris Owings experience.
Total. Right. And that makes a lot of sense. All right, so that was our top 10, and I don't want to go one by one because we'll be here all night. But, Brett, the remaining four people in this tier, the second Suns, the second tier, are Kyle Tucker, Nick Senzel, Nick Williams, and Lewis Brinson. Of those guys, a lot of times we talk about upside, we talk about floor, and we know who has what, and I guess we tend to look for a blend of it, right? So I guess what I want from you is you got four names. Who has the highest fantasy upside? Like what you said about Acuña, I think is really valuable to fantasy owners to say, this guy has the third highest upside on this list. That's worth knowing, even though he's not the number three guy. Of 11 through 14, who has the highest upside? Who do you think is the most the safest pick? And is there someone who has the best blend who isn't one of the other two?
The best, I'll go backwards. So the best floor is Nick Senzel. I think there's of almost anybody in the top 20 or really on the list. I think Senzel has the best chance of being a mixed league fantasy starter than just about anybody on the list. The problem is I don't think his upside's not super high, and I kind of wrote that to the point in the piece that I don't think there's that much of a gap between his ceiling and his floor, but I think he's extremely safe. On the other side, the upside I think it's absolutely Kyle Tucker. I'm a huge Kyle Tucker fan. I had him higher than 11 in my list before we started doing this. So I just think that he's developing the power. I think he's got the ability to hit for average. He's got speed. He's already now in double A. He's hitting 294, 353, 551 as a 20-year-old.
Is that good?
Double A. he's really fucking good. And
yeah, I would tell people who want to get more familiar with Tucker, you know, the Futures game was on Sunday, and he had a double to the warning track. That was a pitch kind of on the outer half of the plate, and it didn't look like he did that much, and he drove it all the way to the warning track. And I think as he adds muscle, you're going to see him start putting balls like that over the fence.
And as recently as last year, we weren't sure if he had that type of power. And yep. Now he's not even max effort swinging, and it's going like that.
It's done that.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, he really wasn't. I think he had, what, 4 or 5 home runs in the first half of last season, and he really turned it on. He really turned it on in the second half, got up to Lancaster, got out of high A really quickly this year. But yeah, I mean, the levers on him, I mean, he's 6'4", and he uses all of his height, and that the muscle's going to come. And, you know, I think you can make an argument for any of about three or four guys to fall in this category, but I think you could easily make the argument that Kyle Tucker would be number four in the pure upside game in on this entire list behind Moncada, Robles, and Acuna.
And Blend, do you have a Blend? I assume Senzel for floor. I kind of assume Tucker would be the answer for Blend of floor and ceiling.
Well, Tucker would be my answer for Blend of floor and ceiling. I think if I'm not talking about him, I'm probably going to say Brinson, just because I think even if the batting average isn't there, I think he does enough outside of the batting average, and the defense is good enough that he's going to be a contributor. And he's got the upside to be, you know, a pretty high end contributor as well.
Yeah,
I think Brinson's a nice blend of the two.
I think I would flip Brinson and Tucker. I think Brinson, if you really want to dream on Brinson and go for the 90th or 100th percentile with Brinson, I mean, you're talking about a potential 25-25-20-30 guy. Mm-hmm. So I think I would go Tucker for blend, definitely Senzel for floor, but I think I prefer Brinson's upside, which I'm, like I said, not as confident he'll get to as Tucker, but right. If we're just talking pure upside, Brinson could be a monster.
That was kind of where I was expecting it to go, but that's why I asked. I mean, it makes sense to see Tucker in that light, you know, enough. And there's obviously the reason Brinson is at 14 rather than 11 like Tucker is because of that, the gap between the likelihood of that happening and all of that. So I guess the question, Ben, where does that leave our guy Nick Williams aside from the majors?
Yeah, I mean, I would argue he. I think he and Brinson have the most potential to fail of this of this quartet for different reasons, sort of. Obviously, I still love Williams. I was definitely the driving force behind him ranking ahead of Brinson. I like that he's already in the majors. I like that, you know, the fact that he doesn't strike out a crazy amount. He's not Joey Gallo, but I like the fact that his relatively advanced strikeout rate still hasn't really killed his production in the high minors, despite his relative youth for the age. So I think he's a guy that is going to need a little bit to adjust and probably struggle in the majors. But I also see him as a 280, 290 hitter who has more pop than people realize. I think more pop and less speed than people realize. Not less speed, but less usable speed. So I still think he's a potential, you know, 280, 20 to 25, 10 steal guy.
Absolutely. That makes sense. And I would also like to point out that he has walked 2 times in 10 games. So
that's, for him, very good.
Yeah, and I believe hit by a pitch. So that OBP,
343. OBP machine, Nick Williams.
We were there.
On base, right? Machine. That's what we talked about. Yeah, I know. It was very exciting. Very exciting. Okay, so moving on to Tier 3, the small council. You mentioned it before. This is where we see people finally start dropping. If I'm correct, I don't believe anyone up to this point fell much aside from the top tier. Someone might have moved from.
Yeah, no, you're right. You're right.
Yeah. So people finally start dropping. I'd like to, I guess, address those guys. I think the biggest in this tier was Austin Meadows. 7 to 17, Brett. I mean, obviously he's not been healthy and he hasn't been good. Is that really as far as it is?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, it's more the injuries than the performance at this point. I don't I've kind of been one of the last guys to come around on Meadows from a pure upside perspective. I don't think he has a huge amount of upside. So I think what you were getting from Meadows was consistency and all around production, which I still think he has the talent to provide. But when you have a guy without sort of what I think is high end ceiling, you want that floor, and the injuries are kind of sapping his floor, and that's kind of what's dropping him down the list in my eyes.
So I just want to add that when Brett and I were discussing this list, I had originally pushed for Meadows to be higher, and the argument that Brett made that really won me over is that this is another soft tissue injury for Meadows. It's another hamstring injury. Yeah. It's not a freak thing like he broke his face again. And I thought that was a pretty effective argument, where this is when you start to label someone as injury prone, not just unlucky.
Sure. Yeah. No. And I think that makes sense. I mean, we dropped him in the actual list as well for many of the same reasons. Francisco Mejia, Ben, one of my favorite guys, but how many games does he catch in the majors? Per season. I'm not giving you what are we dealing with here?
That's the question, man. That's what I mean. He was one of the more difficult prospects for me to rank because, and I hope we conveyed that in the write up, right? Because like, he might have the best hit tool in the minors. He's also a tiny catcher. So if those are two very difficult things to reconcile. I mean, what I'm hoping is that he ends up in a situation with like an upper echelon backup catcher where he only has to catch 70, 80 games a year and the rest can go to the backup and he does a little bit of DH or whatnot. There's also the question of, is he good enough at the plate to just be a DH, which is open for interpretation. So I don't know. I mean, I think he'll be given a shot to be a full-term catcher. And I think a team will try to push him to 110, 120 games caught. Whether or not that will work, I sure hope it does, because if it does, he could absolutely be the man who dethrones Buster Posey.
Yeah, and the tough part of that is not only it's that his size might limit him from catching a ton of games, but it basically limits him from playing first base. Like,
right.
He's almost too small to be a first baseman in his spare time like Posey is. So maybe the outfield, but, you know, how much of a break is he getting in that case? X, Y, you know, all that stuff.
Just to throw in one thing about Mejia, Cleveland is an interesting place for him to be, because it's hard to think about him behind the plate and not think of Carlos Santana behind the plate. Now, they're very different players, but they had similar concerns for different reasons. And, you know, the way the Indians played Santana as a catcher when he was there, Santana never caught more than 100 games a season. And he was their, you know, and you can't see my scare quotes, but he was their starting catcher for 4 years. They played him a lot at first base. They played him a lot at DH. And part of that was because his bat was good enough. And I think Mejia is the same way. I think Mejia's bat is good enough for them to play him at DH, you know, 40 to 50 games a year. I don't know how much that part actually matters. I mean, I don't think when I was thinking about where to put him, I don't think I gave any thought as to whether he could actually catch 135 games in a year or whether he'd be catching 80 to 90 games and piecing it in other positions.
Okay, fair enough. And speaking of people good enough to be a DH, Vladimir Guerrero Jr. He's along with Eloy and Robles, who we mentioned before. He's I think the first guy in the well, I guess he just got promoted to high A, but he was in low A, I believe, when this list was made. What is his presence at in the top 15 say about his potential, Brett?
It says he's got a shit ton of it. I mean, he was.
I guess the phrase it differently. Are we talking about maybe the top fantasy prospect in 2 years?
Probably not, just because the speed is mostly a non-issue with Guerrero, and even someone with the hit and power potential that he has, there's always likely going to be somebody with sort of the five tool tantalizing package that'll be ahead of him. But you know, if you stripped out steals as a category from fantasy leagues, my guess is that Guerrero probably would have been fifth on this list, sixth, something like that. I mean, his hit and power potential, whether he sticks at third or not, honestly, I don't think it matters. If the bat develops the way it could, it won't really matter what position he's at. But his plate discipline has been great. I think he ended his low A tour with more walks than strikeouts. He is still learning how to drive the ball, but he's got a ton of raw power. There's a ton of potential. I mean, you're talking about someone who could be a 330 plus homer hitter eventually.
Yeah, I mean, we know you've never cared if someone's destined for first base. That's obvious.
I was gonna say, if you're gonna compare him to someone in that top tier right now, he'd be more like where Devers is, but with an even better bat and a worse chance of sticking at third. So if you want to sort of average out that possibility, I think this is more a vote of confidence that a year from now, I think he'll be where Devers is.
Right.
Okay. If Guerrero hits at all in Double A, he's a top five prospect.
Right. Right.
No question.
Yeah. And when I hear you talk about that, and it is putting the cart before the horse, but I hear Miguel Cabrera. I mean, that's really in terms of patience, power, ability to hit for average. I know, again, cart before the horse, but that's the kind of upside you're hinting at, right?
Yeah, I don't think I'd quite go that far, but you're not that far off.
Okay. So speaking of potential five-tool guys who could eclipse someone like Guerrero, you guys ranked Luis Robert at the bottom of this tier. We did not rank him at all in our midseason top 50 because we just couldn't really get information on him. He has not played stateside, all of that stuff. So I guess my question, Brett, to you, because I know you're the international guys, what do you know that we don't?
Well, probably nothing. But being a fantasy list, you can gamble way more on the tools, which is the fun part. I mean, you guys have some sort of, you know, responsibility doing the real prospect list, and we get to have a little bit more fun.
We don't.
Robert is he's a real potential five category guy. I think he's, you know, he's an outfielder. So, you know, the natural place to compare him as an exciting five tool Cuban guy that came over is to talk about him in comparison to Moncada. He doesn't have that depth of tool shed, but I think that all of those tools are there. I think the power is probably a grade lower than Moncada's. The speed is probably, it's close, but it's probably also a grade below. The hit tool, honestly, is probably similar in terms of potential, which is the only thing that may be Moncada's downfall. But he really kind of is a mini Moncada just from a fantasy standpoint, even if I don't think he quite gets to that level of upside.
Okay, so jumping just a small bit, Ben, Ozzie Albies ranked 22nd. He's been really good in AAA. It's his second run in AAA, but he's hitting for more average. He's hitting for more power, which is kind of a big deal for a guy who's listed at 5'9", 160. We talked about Albies a lot in our list because I don't know how many really successful 5'9", 160 body type guys there were. When I looked into it numbers-wise, and again, listed numbers are always weird, but I'm looking at the Alexi Amaristas of the world, Luis Sardinas, if you want to really get into failed prospects. So what are the risks with a guy like Albies? I mean, do you see that profile kind of succeeding?
Well,
obviously 22nd is high, so you do, but you know.
Yeah, I mean, I think something that went a long way toward you know, assuaging some of those fears is that he's hitting for a little bit more power now, right? Because the fear with a guy like that is the bat is just going to get knocked out of his hands, and that he will be relentlessly challenged by pitchers because they will have no fear that anything worse than a single is going to happen to them.
Right.
And listen, I don't think Albies is ever really going to be maybe even a 10 to 12 homer guy. You know, maybe he's only 6 to 8, but if he's strong enough now to turn on pitches for doubles, to hit some stuff into the gaps and use his wheels, that's a big deal for someone who had that question coming into the year. So I think nothing but positives this season from Albies, given the fact that he is still stupid young for AAA. Like you said, the approach has improved, the power has improved, and it would be it's very easy for me to see him being a regular with the Braves by this time next season. And all he needs is playing time because he's going to run. So yes, there is definitely some risk there. I mean, if there wasn't that risk, I think you could argue he should be even higher because of his age and production at his level. So I think that risk is baked in here, even if it does look like he's fairly high. But he is high. I think, you know, we do like him.
Sure.
The other thing about Albies, which I'll just throw out there, is that he is fast, but he has been much more successful on the base paths. Yeah,
that's a good point.
AAA this time around. He was last year between AA and AAA, he stole 30 bases, was caught 13 times. He's 21 for 23 this year. That's not something you want to read too much into because it's the minors, and you know your mileage with minor league catchers may vary, but it's a positive sign.
Sure. Yeah, and I put Jose Peraza as his sort of floor. And you know, Peraza is not having, I think Peraza is better than he has shown this year. Peraza is not having a great year. He's at 254 with 4 homers and 15 steals. So not very inspiring. He's the 16th best shortstop in fantasy. So it's still like, and I know Albies is a second baseman probably because of Swanson. So it's a little bit different, but like the bar is still not that high.
Yeah. So Brett, I mean, and Ben, feel free to chime in, but I was thinking about this when we were back talking about Robles and some of the other guys, but how much, given the dearth of steals in the game in general, how much does just the ability to run and potentially be a 30-plus, maybe 40-plus stolen base guy in Albies' case propel him up these rankings?
I mean, it certainly makes a difference. It makes a difference more with guys that are in the high minors because – you know, even when we think we know what's going on at the major league level, it can change quickly. And we've seen it with power numbers over the last 2 years.
I don't think they can change the ball enough to help people steal bases.
No, I agree with
I
that.
I could.
But I think that you don't want to put too much stock into it because you don't know exactly how the stolen base landscape is going to look in 3 years. But yes, it's absolutely a factor. Someone with Albies' profile probably 5 or 7 years ago probably would have been 5 to 10 spots lower on this list, at least in my opinion. So you certainly can't ignore it. But the fact that he will contribute elsewhere, I think it mitigates that entirely.
Sure. Okay. Ben, Ryan McMahon has been my guy for a long ass time. He had a bad 2016.
It was not good.
He's had the opposite 2017. He's been real good. He's not going to play third if he stays in the Rockies org. He's been trotted out at second. He's played some first. What are you expecting out of McMahon? I mean, I love this aggressive ranking, but he's kind of in a weird situation.
He really is, and I'm not. It's going to be a cop out answer, but Brett ended up writing up the McMahon blurb,
and
I No. I think what Brett wrote is perfect. I think best case he's 280, 225 bombs, and either I don't know why he would end up playing second for the Rockets. He gets traded and is playing third for a different team. Sure. I think is the best case scenario. And if not, you know, Brett's blurb of, you know, Adam Lind, but properly appreciated, I think that's perfect. I think he could be somewhere in between the number 14 and number 8 first baseman for 7 years. That sounds very, very good to me in Coors.
Mark Reynolds is a free agent at the end of the year. I think, you know, worst comes to worst, if he's a first baseman, he'll still be valuable, I think. But I want to give us a little bit
Ian Desmond signed to play first base, so.
Yeah, but Ian Desmond can play other positions.
sure, absolutely.
Yeah. Before we move off McMahon, I want to give both me and Ben a little pat on the back for not abandoning him after 2016. We did rank him at the
beginning. I would have abandoned you as friends.
Yeah, well, yeah, that made it more tempting.
Yeah, I know.
It so really, kudos again, yeah. Yeah. Okay, so, Brett, tell me why I shouldn't be going absolutely apeshit over Bo Bichette. Did I ask the wrong guy?
No, you didn't ask the wrong guy. I think I'm probably lower on him than Ben, although I honestly don't remember at this point.
I think this is
were about we about where Ben?
I was higher, but it netted out close.
Yeah. I don't think that I know he's been a really strong performer at low A, to say the least. I don't see the type of fantasy upside that some of the other guys that have destroyed low A have. So, I certainly don't see Vlad Guerrero type upside. I don't see Juan Soto type upside. I think his upside is that next level down, where it's not elite average. I don't think it's elite power. I think he's more where Guerrero, I think, could be 330. I think Bichette might be 280, 25. And, you know, there's not the world's largest difference between them, but I think I think that's the main reason why he's not any higher on this list for me.
Okay. Ben, is that where you're at as well?
I think I'm a tiny bit higher, but no real quibbles. I would just say that I think ranking a dude in low A at 28 is a pretty big compliment.
No, it is. And I my point was that I think, you know, everyone likes the new flavor, right?
Right. No, I didn't mean that against your question.
Every chat I have a minimum of 4 questions. Who's the next Acuña? And it's like, we've had Acuña for 8 months. Like, right. How are we already on the next one? And so Bichette was that for people. And I guess I was trying to look for a reason, you know, just a way to convey, like, you know, slow down sometimes.
Absolutely.
So, Brett, go ahead.
I was just agreeing.
Okay, so I'm going to say, so the top pitcher you had on the list was Alex Reyes. We skipped over him. Francis Martes is at the top of this tier. I mean, he's in the majors now. He's got 2++ pitches. We've talked about him a lot. Not that we haven't talked about some of these other guys, but you have 3 in a row at the bottom of this tier: Kopech, Puck, and Honeywell. And they're all kind of different animals. So, Brett, can you walk us through kind of what landed them where and why?
Sure. I mean, it's a fun group because it's kind of the guy whose upside Ben likes better, the guy whose upside Brett likes better, and the guy who we both think is going to be just really good at the major league level.
Yep. The guy who I like most, is that the
yeah, exactly.
So the guy who we both think, we'll go backwards. The guy who we both think is going to be just really good at the major league level is Honeywell. I think I don't think you could make the argument that he has a higher upside than either Kopech or AJ Puck, but you absolutely should make the argument that he has a much higher floor. Kopech and Puck are just kind of two sides of the same coin. Kopech does it with velocity. I think Puck has the better secondary stuff potential.
It's more consistent right now.
Yes. Certainly. So it's really just kind of what your personal preference is. And I kind of, you know, it's different players and it's a totally different circumstance, but you know, it's part of, it's kind of the same argument that that I know we had about the top prep pitcher on the draft list. You had Hunter Green and you had Mackenzie Gore, and they're not to say that Green is super similar to Kopech or that Gore is super similar to Puck, but it's the same kind of idea. As do you want to build around the elite velocity, or do you want to build around the really good velocity but probably better overall package? There's no wrong answer to it. I mean, they're ranked back to back for a reason. They both could be really fucking good, but it kind of comes down to what you're into. Ben, how does that answer?
Yeah, no, that makes total sense to me. I guess just Brett and I have sort of talked a lot over the past year or two about our philosophies when it comes to ranking dynasty pitching prospects, just because it's such a fool's errand. And really, I am a bit fanatical when it, for me, it's upside. Just because everybody busts or gets hurt at such a high rate that if I'm going to invest in one of these guys, I want to at least maximize my potential return. So, like Brett said, having these three in a row means we like all of them plenty, and certainly don't think that putting Honeywell first is crazy just because he's a safer bet. But when push comes to shove for me and it comes to Dynasty League prospects, I am always going to take the guy with the highest upside, and I do think that's Kopech.
Yeah, and just to take a step back, I mean, Ben and I joked before we did the list that we should have zero pitchers on the entire list. And
you did pretty well in terms of that.
We had nine. So we only had nine pitchers on the top 50, and one of them is the last name that we threw on there because who the fuck knows what to do about him. But it is absolutely an intentional thing. I think if the minors were a little bit less down overall, I think that number would have been even less. But by the time we got into the 25 to 50 range, I think we just kind of looked at each other and were like, yeah, I'd rather take the chance that this guy doesn't blow up his arm than put another one of these kind of boring or really far away hitters onto this list.
Yeah, no, I think that makes sense. And I would just also advise everyone to go watch Honeywell's two innings from the Futures game, because it was
pretty good.
It was pretty good. And while you're there, watch Kopech's one inning. And for people freaking out about how good Kopech was, keep in mind that he was essentially acting as a reliever, which is what a lot of people think he'll be. But it was damn good. But speaking of someone who's further away and also might be the answer to the next Ronald Acuna, Leody Taveras is not having a great year, but he is only 18. He is in full season ball. Brett, why should people hold on? Why should people not say, yeah, he's far enough away, so I'll throw him in a deal just to get it done? And why would they regret doing that?
Because holding your own as an 18-year-old in full season ball is extraordinarily impressive, and Taveras has a real five-tool profile, even though the power at this point, I think, probably seems to top out around average. But there's nothing wrong with 15 to 20 home runs on top of a true five category profile. So no, I don't have any issue getting aggressive with players like this. I think, I think Taveras is the kind of guy who might just not put up extraordinary minor league numbers, and part of the reason is because he's talented enough to handle really aggressive assignments. So, he's certainly not the player like this, but you look at Manny Machado's minor league numbers, and they were never that impressive because the Orioles really pushed him super aggressively. So the whole age level thing really makes a difference with Taveras, and I'm still just as bullish as on him as I was at the beginning of the season. I think he could be a really special prospect.
Yeah, or even – go ahead, Brent.
Well, part of the reason you have to rank him here is you can't take the middle ground with guys like this. Either you buy in and you get them now in case they're superstars, or you don't have the chance to get them. Yeah, so
you're going to pay triple the price if you end up getting them later.
Exactly. So I think Brett and I are both of the mind that, you know, maybe only one out of every three guys like this hits, but they're valuable enough that you should be willing to sort of, you know, accept that attrition rate, because these aren't the guys you can play conservatively with.
Okay, and while we're on the subject of attrition rate, Jorge Mateo, still on this list, kind of incensed people a little bit, but we talked about stolen bases a little bit, Ben. I mean, that's everything here, basically, right?
Yeah, it's everything, and I think it's also, I personally don't believe he's as bad as he proved to be last season. Yes, stolen bases are absolutely the driving factor. And, you know, I think Brett had a really good exchange with a commenter in our post for this, where the commenter was, you know, comparing him to Delino DeShields Jr., which I think is a very fair floor for Mateo. And then Brett was like, well, that's a good floor, but Delino DeShields Jr. is still the 51st best outfielder in fantasy this year, even though he really hasn't done anything just because of the speed. And do you want the 51st best outfielder with your 36th prospect? No. But as the absolute floor, I think speed is more important than some people give it credit to be.
Yeah, and he certainly has to have the play, you know, performance to earn the playing time. But if he got Delino DeShields playing time, he'd run.
It's still more.
He would. Yeah, absolutely. He's at 32 stolen bases already this year, and that includes a .288 OBP in high A. So a little good and a little bad there. Brett, Walker Buehler was a big name for us on our list. He's been really damn good. The tools are all there in terms of his arsenal, potential for four above average pitches, with some of them being, you know, above and beyond that. He also has thrown into the sixth inning once in his professional career. So what are you how did you land at 38th for Buehler?
I think you just look at the upside and throw your hands up in the air, and because there's no insight that either me or Ben or you could give about Buehler that will make people feel better about him staying healthy or staying in a starting role. So, you know, he's a pitcher. It's a crap, not to borrow a line from every top 10 we had this offseason, but he's a pitcher. You don't know. He hasn't been tested really in the way he's going to need to be tested in order to prove himself a quality starter in the majors. You know, I think there is a fair amount of floor here because of the way that major league teams use relievers. And I think if Buehler is a reliever, I think he could be an awfully valuable one. You know, we're kind of in an age where you don't have to be a closer to be a valuable reliever. I mean, it's harder, but you can. The difference with starters going fewer and fewer innings, the difference in value between starters and relievers is slowly diminishing. But that trajectory may also not entirely continue. His stuff is unquestioned, I think, at this point. But you know, I don't know what to do with him. It seemed like a good spot to put him.
No, and that's fair. I kind of see a lot of similarities between him and Kopech, frankly. We don't know if they're definitely going to be starters. They could be really good without being starters. And it's high in velocity. So that makes sense. We are coming to the end of that tier. It's tier five, Children of the Forest. I guess I just have a quick comment. It's not a question, but, you know, I mentioned about Buehler only going into the sixth inning. I love Mitch Keller. He's at the top of this tier at number 33. And I think there's a compelling reason. He might not have the pure quality of stuff of Buehler, or as deep an arsenal at least. But, you know, I use that stat throwing into the sixth inning. He's completed the sixth inning 16 times since the beginning of last year. Even someone like Colby Allard, who had a bad back when he was drafted, and he's completed the sixth inning, I think, 15 times since the beginning of last year. So that should give some, I guess, context to Buehler's situation and how tenderly the Dodgers have treated him. Doesn't mean he can't throw, you know, really well in those later innings. It just means he hasn't. So that's just something that people should be keeping in mind. So we're going to go to the Knights of Summer, the last tier. And rather than grill you guys about it, I want you each to pick someone who you think has the best chance of being, I don't know, let's say top 25 entering next year, and someone who you think is kind of the riskiest or most likely to drop off or be way down in a 101. So, Ben, why don't you go first?
Yeah, it's a good question, and it's boring because I'm going to go with the guy who tops this list, but Corey Ray could still turn it around and pretty easily, I think, be a top 25 guy. It hasn't been a wildly encouraging start to his professional career. I don't think the contact skills have really been where we want them to be. This is sort of a nebulous concept, but it just hasn't, like, it hasn't looked right yet. You know what I mean? Like,
saw him, and I know exactly what you mean.
That's probably where I stole it from. Yeah, it just hasn't. It hasn't really, like, all coalesced for us yet on the field. But that's not, you know, totally. It might not be great for someone with his draft pedigree, but it's not totally crazy for someone with his experience and of his age. So, you know, he's a guy where if the second half of his season is much better than the first half, I think he could easily be top 25, you know, if not a year from now. If not for the preseason ranking, then maybe a year from now. Mm-hmm. Brett?
The guy who I'll take to jump is Fernando Tatis Jr.
Yeah.
I think the power speed profile is great. He's performing extremely well at a young age in low A. I think I think there is enough here for him to, if he does what he's been doing, if he continues and he, you know, he makes it up to high A by the end of the season, I think he's likely a top 25 guy at year's end, with the potential to get even higher in future years.
Okay, and do either of you have someone you're kind of worried about in this section that you think has a chance to tank or slide backwards?
Sure, I'll go and I'll sort of kill myself a little bit here. I mean, Chance Cisco is on this list because of me, and mm-hmm. that would not come as a surprise to anybody who has followed me and my thoughts over the past few years. But I do acknowledge that he is a catching prospect who is still not 100% locked to be a long-term catcher. And he's a good hitter who still isn't hitting for power. So I'm banking on at least one of those two attributes coming through. But if neither of them do, he could drop down this list like crazy fast.
Brett, anyone stand out for you in a negative light?
I mean, we can't shy away from the obvious answer, which is that Lucas Giolito has a lot more downside to go. Of course, he also has a lot more upside to reclaim if things go in that direction. But, only the gods know what Lucas Giolito will become at this point.
The old and the new.
Yeah, the old and the new. But if he is a reliever, then he's nowhere near the 50th best prospect in baseball. And we're not there yet. And honestly, I don't think we're going to be there at the end of the season either. I don't see him ranking that much lower than this, no matter how the rest of the year shakes out, as long as he's healthy. But yeah, there's a lot of floor still to give on this one.
Yeah, Brett and I were so confused by Giolito that basically once we had agreed we wanted him on this list, we just agreed to put him at 50.
the ultimate hedge.
Yeah, because we were like, well, we don't fucking know. So we don't want people to forget about him, but God, there's really no way to predict what's coming.
Yeah, I think just on someone to slide up, I'll throw out a name. I have not known what to do with this guy for a while, but the feedback we've gotten on Alex Verdugo is really quite good. And I get why he's a little lower on a list like this, because he is basically average base. He doesn't hit for almost any power at all, despite playing in the PCL. But he's walking more than he's striking out and hitting .346 as a 20. He turned 21 during the season. It's really impressive. And he can really hit the ball. And he might have a little more power than he's even showing now. He did have 13 home runs last year. At Double A, but even if the power's not there, that high end of an average, and he doesn't strike, he's under a 10% strikeout rate in the minors this year. He's never been over 15 in any sort of sample size. So his ability to just as a pure hitter is way up there. And I think he's someone who, you know, if he's able to do this throughout the end of the year, given that he is in Triple A and on the verge of the majors, it wouldn't surprise me to see him maybe not top 25, but top 30-ish. And in the list in the off season. So, assuming he still has eligibility by that time. So that is the name. I guess I would be remiss in asking, you know, we're going to get to the honorable mentions, but I'd like to know, how far off the list was Enya?
Welcome back to episode 91 of Tino. We hope you use that break to slot Enya into your own personal top 50 rankings. So now that we are through this list, we just want to briefly talk about our honorable mentions and sort of pick the brains of Craig here, who has been involved in the production of the IRL top 50 list, and just see if there's anyone who he thinks either should have been in consideration for the list or definitely should have been on the list. And the good thing is he's been very, very prepared to do this. Has had
you son of a bitch.
Just days, weeks, really, to prepare. So expecting some very thorough and concise answers. So basically, I'll very quickly go through who our honorable mentions were. And this was not a scientific process. This is just guys that came up on at least one of my list or Brett's list, or that we like sort of discussed at some point for the back end. And that was Anthony Alford, Colby Allard, Yadier Alvarez, Yusnil Diaz, Lucas Erceg, Mackenzie Gore, Hunter Green, Jason Grom, Josh Hader, Alec Hansen, Adam Haseley, Jamai Jones, Carter Kiboom, don't care, Tristan McKenzie, Mickey Moniak, Blake Rutherford, Sixto Sanchez, Jesse Winker, and Kyle Wright.
Kiboom, he's not even a maester.
It's Kaboom, I'm pretty sure.
It's Kaboom?
Or Kiboom.
It's Kiboom. Yeah. It's
Kiboom. I like it. Okay. Anyway, not a lot of not much of a pattern to go off of there. Obviously, there are a few more recent draftees, which we wanted to include because we knew we'd get a bunch of questions about them. But just a big old tier of either guys who are new to the pool, guys who have fallen a little bit, up race. Well, that's because George is texting us about a drag race right now. guys who are on the upswing. So, Craig, can you think of one or two players from this group that you definitely would have put in the top 50?
Yeah, I mean, I would have tried to make room for Sixto. A Philly article came out today that he got a lot of attention on, so I'm sure people are aware of him. We've been talking him up at you know, on the prospect side for a little bit here, but he's hitting 100 with ease. I think he hit 100 six times in 64 pitches yesterday, and he's got kind of a cutter. He's got movement on the fastball, so it's 100 with some movement. He's got a slider. You know, the second he flashes the secondaries, he's short. There's a lot of risk involved. He might, you know, he's easy to throw in the reliever bucket, but he is really good. So I think, you know, in my own 50, you know, maybe if I'm involved in this and I get a 51, you know, maybe it's 6-0. And I know the aversion to pitchers, but I he's someone we had in our top 20, and I just think he's gonna be easily top 50 by the time the season's over. So that's one name. I will just say, I know you went through the list here for honorable mentions. Brett had one of my favorite quotes from the New York event on Adam Haseley. Brett, do you remember what it was?
No, what was it?
He said he's like a power speed guy who's not going to have that much power and not going to have that much speed.
Yeah, that sounds like Adam Haseley.
Yeah. So that was I really like Brett, like, endorsed, like, just the most backhanded endorsement I've ever heard of somebody. I am trying to look here. Did you guys have Forrest Whitley? We've gone through a lot of names. Am I making that up?
No.
Forrest Whitley, didn't.
You could have exchanged out Whitley for any of the pitchers on honorable mention, to be honest. But, yeah, he was not on the list.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's up in that area. I guess another name I'd bring up as a bat is Luis Urias. Did you have thoughts on him? Was there a reason rejected him that not even on the honorable mentions? I mean, he's like, you know, he's hitting in Double A as a 20-year-old, I think.
Yeah, I don't love the upside for Urias, which is why I didn't have him on my individual list. I don't know. I don't want to speak for Ben. I mean, you were talking about guys either. You were talking about guys who have the profile of Ozzy Albies, the only other guy who's listed at 5'9", 160, who's a prospect that people take seriously, is Luis Urias.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely
right. But Urias doesn't run, though.
Right.
So I just, I don't see the fantasy impact being very much.
No, yeah, and that was more of a question than a recommendation. I've never been someone who was super on there. I guess the one guy I might have expected to see towards the back, I know it's not. I mean, but just because of some speed, and he had some success at the majors this year, is Magnus Sierra. Did you guys talk about him and reject him? Just not come up. I know he was in the majors for some of the year, but he's, you know, I think he's. Look, you have Moniak in the honorable mentions. I kind of think he's what people want Moniak to be in terms of average first. He runs a little bit, plays a good center field.
I mean, I think Moniak has a better hit tool. Sierra, to me, if we were to extend this to 101, I feel like he might be one of my, like, bottom 10 guys.
Interesting.
I mean, that's a hard thing to say without context. You know what I mean?
Sure, like, sure.
Maybe he would have been 70. I don't know.
Yeah, I think I think he'd be closer to the 60 to 70 range, probably. But I mean, I agree with Ben. I think Moniak's got the better higher upside from a hit tool perspective. I also think he's got the ability to hit for more power. I mean, Moniak's not going to be a 25 home run hitter, but I mean, Sierra, I don't think is going to get to double digits at all. So, you know, there's a noticeable difference there, I think.
Oh, sure. I would disagree on hit tool. I mean, they're kind of already soft platooning Moniak in low A, which is never a great sign. It's obviously very early, but I think Sierra hits more, but does not approach the same level of power whatsoever. I would absolutely agree with that. And I think they probably run, you know, about the same number. Although I guess Sierra runs a little bit more in a few less plate appearances. But that's probably the guy I'd make the biggest stink about. And I'd probably have him towards the back end of a 50, but I understand not including him. I probably would have had him in the honorable mentions if I didn't. So I think that's all I have.
Cool.
That makes sense to me. I feel like there was somebody else I was going to ask you about on this list, but it's not coming to mind. Oh, okay. So with Carter Kiboom, Kaiboom, Kaboom, in with his injury, I guess what I wanted to ask you was that really the main reason that Enya wasn't on the list, Brett? Welcome back to episode 91 of Tino. As always, we'll send you out with a little housekeeping. You can follow this podcast on Twitter at Tino Podcast and get in touch with us through email at tinopodcast@gmail.com. You can find Brett on Twitter at BrettSayerBP. You can find Craig at CD. That's CD as in...
can't decide.
Goldstein. You can find our producer, George, at George Bissell, and you can find me at Ben Carsley. Thank you for listening, and have a good night.
My favorite thing in the entire history of that podcast was the after the episode thing, and it was towards the end of season five when he did the Hisdar calling up the sports radio show and talking about the fighting pits and Marine.
Yeah.
I think I almost drove off the road when that was happening.
Mine is still, no matter how many times they're like, I'm not tired. The Joffrey, like the nasally Joffrey, is so on point.
Yeah. I don't think we had many call ups.
Garrett Cooper?
We could. Should we talk about the new Yankees first baseman?
Yeah, dude. Garrett Cooper. You don't know Garrett Cooper?
Who is that?
He's my friend. He's younger than I am. He plays first base for the Yankees now.
No, I legitimately have no idea who that is.
I thought
he's a no one 26-year-old who was mashing in AAA for the Brewers. So the Yankees traded
They traded one of their Tylers.
Yeah, exactly. They had too many Tylers, so now they have a Garrett Cooper because they were Cooperless earlier.
What happened to fantasy superstar Greg Bird?
Yeah, I'm putting that one in the win column for Ben.
I think we all get to put that one in the win column.
He was going in like the 12th round by the end of the spring.
He really was. It was insane.
I couldn't figure it out.
He was being drafted well ahead of Aaron Judge, which is hilarious now.
Yeah,
I mean, no one thought Judge was going to... I mean...
Oh, someone had Judge at number 16, but, you know...
I'm not saying anyone thought... I'm not saying anyone should have been paying $20 for Aaron Judge. I'm just saying that I would have... I didn't end up with either anywhere, but I would have paid more for Aaron Judge in an auction at the beginning of the
season. I would like to say, with the benefit of hindsight, that someone should have paid $20 for Aaron Judge. I will take that stance.